You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All righty, third hour of Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. The emails are buzzing after that last hour with Shelley. Only 5 emails from Noah. So, Noah, I don't know if we'll get to them today, but we're going to work on it. Third hour, we got Grant Kruger from Union Hospitality coming up at the bottom of the hour. He's on Jump in Tucson, of course, right after us. But I had him come in early to talk about ballot props that have to do with wages and tip credits and all that fun geeky stuff that you need to understand. Shelley Kais is back for another hour of radio. Good morning, lady.
Good morning.
Is your phone okay? Did you get any messages?
Well, my phone's blowing up too.
Thank you very much. So. And then we have my friend April Boré.
Yes.
As I like Boré.
I do too, because that's how it's said. Yeah. So that's good job. Just like the French hat, even though it's not spelled that way.
That's true. And I used to know her. She worked at Visit Tucson eons ago.
Yes, it was a long time ago.
I can't believe you're still at this gig.
I know. Well, I love tourism. It's fun.
I know that.
Yes.
It's just usually no one in tourism works at a place for more than 3 years. So.
Well, I'm not at Visit Tucson anymore. So.
Thank you.
Kind of goes with the trend. But then, I've been at the Presidio Museum now for
8 years.
I think we're 8 years. We started at the same time.
Sorry. Really?
Uh-huh. Yes.
And who's this young lady to your right?
Kate Avalos.
Kate Avalos.
Director of Interpretive Programming.
Oh, my.
Did I get that right?
Lord.
You did get that right. Oh, actually, it's Avalos.
Avalos. Sorry, not
it
Avalos.
It is Avalos.
Avalos. Like avocado.
Yes.
Avalos.
Yes.
Has that been your job the entire time you were at the Presidio Museum?
Like my entire life.
Wow.
I was correcting this pronunciation of my name.
No.
He needs your title.
I'm sorry.
No, it's not. I actually started as a volunteer.
This is like a Shecky Green comedy bit here.
No, I started as the volunteer coordinator 8 years ago.
Okay.
And eventually just worked my way up to director of interpretive programs.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that a pay raise?
It was, yes.
Yeah. Love it. What's your college? Do you have a college degree?
Wait till you hear this. Da, 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 da.
Nice build up.
Tell me it's biochemistry or something.
No. It is Bachelor of Histories from the U of A.
Okay.
And then a Master's in Museum Studies from Harvard Extension School.
Oh. Look at that.
Nice.
And you're using it, though.
I am.
That's
yes.
What I like.
I actually went to school for
your
my
family's
master's.
Like, wow, that's yeah. Awesome.
While I was at the Presidio, working at the Presidio is when I got my master's from Harvard Extension School.
Look at you. Look at you.
Yeah.
Now, explain what, for the rookies out there who haven't been there, what's the Presidio Museum?
The Presidio Museum is a recreation of the original Presidio San Agustin del Tucson that was founded by the Spanish in 1775. So
okay.
A year before the Revolutionary War out here, Spain was settling and they were taking over land. And so they founded the Presidio. They basically moved it up from Tubac. And they established their Presidio here. So it's really the beginning of the European occupation of this area.
Ooh.
And so at our museum, we have a recreation, a small portion of it. We do some living history activities. We do cultural events and just try to expose people to not just the Spanish history, but all of our history, Native American history, Chinese history, any kind of history that we have and different cultures we've had, we try to bring those in to the museum and help people to
So when people
that.
Say, are you a mini colonial Williamsburg of Tucson history? Is this accurate? Is it an insult? What is it?
It's not an insult.
No.
Okay.
No,
not entirely accurate either.
No.
Explain, interpretive lady. Kate Avalos.
So, like April was saying, we have a lot of events. Well, Colonial Williamsburg, you could say, is more narrowed in what their scope is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We are covering thousands of years of history at Tucson. So that's where I would say, like, we are a little different because we have a early people's park. So we're going back to over 2,000 years ago for the people that were here then, all the way up into Tucson being American. So we're just interpreting indigenous people, Mexico, Spain, and then all the different groups in the 1800s that really helped kind of make Tucson the city it is now.
And of course, we make a lot of things out of quince, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, so- we do. It's really good, believe it or not.
There was that one lady when I was doing the tours there. She was like the quince master.
Yes. Mm, I know, with the quince jelly.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
With the cheese. Oh, it's yummy on a cracker. I'll tell you that.
We've done tours when I was kind of doing that a little more heavy a few years ago, you know, where you tie the Presidio Gardens with what you guys do. And it just makes too much sense, right? Because those various eras of people doing what they were doing in the garden world, you know, reflects what you guys are trying to interpret and display at the Presidio Museum. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Yes, that is.
Yeah. Okay. You're talking Mission Garden, correct?
Mission Garden.
Yeah, yes. Mission Garden.
That's why you're so confused. You're like, what's this psycho talking about? Shelley, have you been to the Presidio Museum?
You know what? I have not.
Uh-oh. Well, you should come and check it out.
I know.
We have a great event coming up this month.
What's that?
We have our Mexican Independence Day celebration coming up on September 14th.
Okay.
So you could come to that, Shelley.
That sounds very exciting.
Yeah.
What's going on at the party?
So we are actually going to have mariachi, ballet folklorico. We work with a Mexican consulate because they send in a representative to deliver El Grito for us, which is like the cry for freedom that is very well known with Mexican independence. Yeah. And the president does it in Mexico City. So we kind of try to somewhat do a very smaller scale celebration than Mexico City, but kind of give people a taste of how they celebrate it in Mexico.
Okay.
Since Tucson was actually part of Mexico at one point. So that's our reason for doing it.
So what time does this go down?
5 to 8 p.m.
Okay.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. So it'll be cooler because it'll be in the evening. And we'll have nachos and alcoholic and non-alcoholic drinks available for sale.
Good answer there, April.
Yes, thank you. Face painting and body painting.
Uh-huh. And body painting?
Yeah, well, you have to keep your clothes on.
I'm in.
We are a family place, so it does have to stay
but
at least
PG. But if you want your arm painted instead of your face, that can happen.
I get to see Shelly's crew hitting some quince margaritas.
I don't know what a quince is.
Explain a quince to Shelley.
It's a fruit that grows on a tree, and it was native to Mexico. Am I right, Kate?
Actually, I don't think so. I think quince go pretty far back. Okay. They're ancient.
But did the Spanish bring it with them?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they did. And it kind of looks like a golden, delicious apple, but it's really hard, so you can't just bite into it. You'd probably break a tooth. So
sounds
good,
doesn't it?
Boil it down or do something with it so you can actually eat the quince.
Why do I may be making this up in my head. What were you going to say? I saw you leaning in.
So we make a margarita from that?
You can.
I mean, that's where I'm going.
Chris would try.
Yeah, you could if you wanted to.
Okay.
Because you can make a syrup
out of it. Can make a syrup.
Oh, all right. There we
jelly,
go.
Jelly, jams. Yes.
All right.
Yeah, get one of those hipster mixologists running downtown.
You're right.
Put them to work, for God's sakes.
Yeah, no kidding.
Do your job and make a quince margarita. Jeez.
You can make a margarita out of a head of lettuce if you try it.
It is true. It
you
is.
Try hard enough.
Well, let's do this. Let's I did have a question about quince. Isn't there maybe I imagined this in my bewildered brain, but aren't there some parts of Tucson that still have like a quince tree or two out there? Like I feel like in someone's backyard right now. Who's telling me? Was this Rocco? I have to think about this.
Possibly now. The Presidio and Mission Garden have quince trees.
Right, I remember that. But there was someone telling me that there's actually like houses that have been around.
Basically, a long time.
Yep, that have a few of those still around. I got to think. Tia Gloria, give me an answer. This is right up to you. You're listening.
There we go. Or if somebody has one, they can just call in and say, hey, I have one.
All right. And we want proof. I don't want one of your drunk calls.
Email a
people
picture.
Where you say, I got a quince tree. Yes, best damn quince tree in all of
and
all
it's actually
of Pliskin Acres. It's got no fruit, but I know it's a quince tree. So,
exactly.
All right, we're going to do one more segment with the ladies from the Presidio Museum. Grant Kruger coming up at the bottom of the hour. You're on Wake Up Tucson. You want to go to TucsonPresidio.com to find out more. Hit the calendar of events and scroll down, and you'll see the Mexican Independence Day. Doors open at 5, and April and Ballet Folklorico are dancing
at
5:15. Wake up. All right, we're doing our Battle of the Music Artists for Bump Music. Today is Sting versus Phil Collins.
Oh,
two guys who fronted very popular British bands who had huge solo careers themselves. Right now, actually, I don't know why I didn't do it while we were talking. Quince Margarita. Now, this sounds total. This is where mixologists go wrong, and we're hanging out with Kate and April from the Presidio Museum. Quince Mustard Margarita.
Mustard.
Oh, mustard.
That sounds odd.
As our friend Jeff Goldblum said in Jurassic Park, just because you could didn't mean you should.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Quince Margarita Cocktail.
Nah, that sounds good.
Yes, now we're talking here. Oh, I have to sign in to get the recipe? Come on. Piss off. Anyway, as Matt said, we can make... Oh, my... Here we go. So, if we run out of time, remember, PresidioMuseum.org, September 14th.
Right,
yes. 5 o'clock start is the Mexican Independence Day.
Yes.
And we might ask you more questions, but we got Quince calls.
Oh.
Ooh.
So, Lawrence and Tia Gloria, God bless her. She was awake. But let's start with... Who should I go first? Lawrence, what's up, buddy?
Hey, not much. You know, the Quince grow really well here, and they're called membrillo in Spanish. And my mom used them. She put them in pot roast. And you're right, you do have to cook them. They're also rendered and made into, like, a bar. It's called cajeta de membrillo. You can buy it anywhere in a lot of the grocery stores, Mexican grocery stores here in town. You know, Food City has it. And it's just really fabulous, but they are they can grow here, and they do really well here in this part of the country.
That's what I'm talking about. Quince talk.
Yeah.
So when you get the cajeta de membrillo, what do you do with that other than stick it in pot roast?
No, you put the quince in the pot roast.
What do you do with the bar?
Okay. So what I do is I used to love to cut it and cut it in slices. Put in a tortilla and put the queso fresco, you know, the real ranch cheese.
Yeah.
Put it in there, wrap it up, and eat it that way. That's how I ate it the most.
Wow.
Yeah. And I enjoyed it that way. Yeah. Then I would use, you know, it works well with all, like, my mom's thin tortillas, but when I get my godmother's little gorditas, the little fatter ones, little thicker ones, because my mom could never make those. it was just awesome. No, she couldn't. God bless her soul. She could not make those. My aunt could, my godmother, my grandmother. But my mom made awesome tasting tortillas. So
I love it. All right, Lawrence.
That's how I eat it.
Thank you for sharing that, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, you're welcome. No problem. You take care. Have a great day, everybody.
You too,
bye-bye.
My friend.
Bye-bye.
790-2040. Let's go to Tia Gloria. Welcome to Quince Talk. What's up, girl?
Hi, Christopher.
Hi, babe.
And lady. The Quince trees at Mission Garden are DNA correct from Spain. They of course were in Italy, but the ones that came to Mexico came from Spain, and then from Spain to Tucson. And the quince fruit is very good to eat, very fresh, kind of almost sharp, but in a very good way. And the membrillo, the cajeta de membrillo, you can buy it at grocery stores and carnicerias, but don't just buy it. Feel it first. Take your finger, and if it doesn't give when you push it, don't buy it, because you could take a filling out.
Oh, gee.
So kind of the avocado test?
Yes. And if you're going to have a cheese board, you've got to have a nice chunk of the membrillo, let's call it membrillo paste.
Okay.
They also sell it in little jars at World Market. Those are usually from Italy, from your part of the country, Chris. But you put a piece of brie or any kind of cheese and then spread some membrillo on it, some quince on it, and oh my goodness gracious, it is good stuff.
That's how we used to serve it when we were doing the gastronomy tours. We had the little the bread from Barrio, and then the membrillo and the
and we do manchego cheese. Manchego cheese is very
it's
good
really
with it too.
Good.
That's a winner.
No, with manchego, can't go wrong with that. you know, it, with any kind of cheese, but yeah, we really need to make it more popular. It's good for you too.
You know what we need to do? We need to do a quince tasting on the air.
We should.
Bring Gloria.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And we come back and we do a quince episode together.
Uh-huh.
All okay. right? So it's happening, Gloria.
We'll make it happen.
A quince tasting at one of the parties, Christopher.
Okay. We can do that. We got to find out what's because, the best alcohol that goes with quince.
Quince margaritas, right?
Thank you.
Jeez, I thought we settled that.
Thank you. Gloria, thank
Prosecco.
Actually, that sounds nice. Prosecco uh-huh. with it.
Gloria likes Prosecco. She would drink that with cereal if she needed to.
And so. I might go do it right now.
All right, Gloria, thank you for the great call. And say hi to Teddy. 790-2040 if you have any quince calls. Anything else we don't give a flying crap about. So one question I have for you is, what I've noticed in the history, interpretive history kind of world, or you look at historical societies, everyone's usually over the age of 90 that's involved in it. Okay. Now you two are not. You're younger ladies. And so how do we survive the aging out of people who give a crap about history? And then, you know, because I know you have school groups and all that stuff,
right.
but
yeah.
how do you bridge the school group to those people over the age of 70 who give a crap? You know what I mean? About this.
Well, it is. I mean, obviously the people who are more elderly are not usually working, so they have more time, which is why a lot of them are working as our volunteers or, you know.
But I'm just saying attending
place.
Almost too.
Oh, attending. Yeah, yeah. Well, it depends on the event. I mean,
it does,
The celebration of Shuksan Tucson that we had last month to celebrate the 249th anniversary of the Presidio Museum. We had all kinds of different ages.
We did.
Oh, good.
And that was, I think, partly due to the entertainment we had, which was the deer dance. We had a deer dancer. And then we also had mariachi.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me again. But we had all kinds of different organizations, cultural organizations.
You had one deer dancer?
No, there was like four of them.
Oh, you said the deer dancer. I know the budget's rough sometimes.
Yeah,
but
right.
There's like four of them, and you go, April's like, I can only take
one
of you.
I can take you.
Yeah.
That's it.
Send us your best.
Yeah, right.
You have the cleanest costume you're in.
That's right. That works. But, you know, that kind of thing is attractive to all different ages and,
sure.
and mm-hmm. families and that kind of thing.
So it's
thing.
About programming in the end?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. For attendance. Yeah.
It really, Bexley
yeah.
Independence Day brings a lot of family. So then we have a
yes.
huge age range of people coming in
yeah.
for that event.
Yeah. And it helps too that our entertainers are kids. So their families come
mm-hmm.
also.
Sure.
So, you know, again, it depends on what kinds of presentation and entertainment you're having and that kind of thing.
Now, I asked her years ago when she was on, but I got to ask you because it's uh-huh. your rookie debut on Wake Up Tucson. Top two locally owned restaurants you like to eat at right now?
Oh, wow. Top two. That's a tough one. I love The Hub because of the ice cream.
Well, that's their best thing, so
uh-huh.
good job.
And another one. I'm going to go for Mexican food and maybe
good
say
choice.
Taco Hero.
Okay. Is there a particular Taco Hero you like to go to?
There's one right by my house, so that would probably be the one I'd like to go to.
Okay.
I'm surprised they don't have quince Membrillo margaritas. They have such a huge alcohol list. They have a huge drink list.
Well, it's time to raise your hand
that's
and say,
right.
excuse me.
Excuse me.
Give them Membrillo and go
yeah.
get working on this, kids.
Yeah.
All right, exactly. So presidiomuseum.org.
.com.
.com.
Yeah, .com. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then it's September 14th, Mexican
Correct.
Independence Day.
Yes.
Doors open at 5 p.m.
Correct.
And where are you real quick in under 20 seconds?
196 North Court, which is right across the street from JoJo's restaurant and right down the street from El Charo.
Well played. Great seeing both of you guys.
You too. Thank
we'll
you for having
do it again
us.
Soon. Shelly and I are coming back with Grant Kruger. Wake up. Hey,
that
Matt.
Was,
oh, sorry.
That was fun.
Oh, that was very fun. Kruger is rolling in like in the next 34 seconds. So. You might have to go unlock the door for the young man. So, 8:34 in the morning, Shelly Kies, Christy Sabone. That was the most fun you could have with quince discussion ever.
You know what? You said quince, and I thought, wow, I don't know what that is.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, here he is. Big Sexy's here. Welcome to Quince Talk here at Wake Up Tucson.
Yeah.
So, Shelly, so that was the most. Who knew we can get two calls on quince?
I know. It was so exciting. And Martina Romero was texting me, telling me, you know, that it's called membrillo.
Nice.
And all this. So thanks for that. But before we get too far, just to make sure everybody understands
some numbers.
Oh, we've
been too far. We've been too far for a while.
Already.
Grant Kruger's here. Good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Hey. Hey, Grant.
Good morning, Shelly.
Nice to see you.
Amazing to be here. Excited to be with you guys here this morning. We're talking all things local ingredients, I see, right up my alley.
I want to see something quince-like at Reforma before the month's out.
We're going to have to work this out. I think we'll actually call it membrillo as opposed to quince, though.
Yes.
It's actually tougher to get local ingredients in restaurants than you might think. Like, this local culture comes from, say, Northern California, where everything grows, right? You just put a seed in the earth and it rises up. But locally, we can get to Wilcox tomatoes and apples, certain nuts, right? Tepary beans. But how many dishes can you do with a tepary bean before it starts to wear a little thin on the general public?
So I remember at the it's a Native American museum up in Phoenix downtown. It's beautiful. It's which one? Heard, the Heard Museum, and their museum, they do tepary hummus.
Okay.
That's their big thing. So just that's the only thing I've ever had made of tepary, but we'll get there.
We're going to have to work out some quinceritas over here for the wakeys.
Oh.
All right. So before we get to Grant's going to drop some knowledge on us about ballot propositions that have to do with wages, you wanted to share some registration numbers.
I want to give numbers. So we have 237,000 Democrat voters in Pima County.
Okay.
179,000 Republicans and 219,000 other. So that could be Libertarian, No Labels, PND, IND.
Okay. All right.
So remember earlier we talked about you need a strategy going forward. How are you going to win a race if you're a Republican candidate in Pima County? There's your numbers that you have to work with.
Well, certainly there's been some success for Republican candidates on both the treasurer and the sheriff's front. It seems that the general public, in spite of the voter registration, is absolutely willing to elect Republican sheriffs and treasurers.
I just think the Trump factor with D's is so weird. Right. So both those gentlemen that you're talking about. Well, yeah. Well, Beth is, I guess she's the outlier, right? Where she was elected when Trump got in 2020. Right.
Yes.
Where Napier got tossed in 2020.
Right. It took Beth like 2 weeks, though, didn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
You are correct.
We were counting ballots everywhere.
Well, but even look at the gubernatorial election where Kimberly Yee, you know, got so many votes as the Republican treasurer statewide as well, too. Like, quite frankly, there's something about still electing a Republican treasurer out there. I feel like that's a safer position.
Well, no doubt Chris Ackerley is the safest position.
Absolutely.
He is our guy. There's no doubt.
No, and certainly the most experienced candidate as well, too, having a few years on the ground in the field and in a political position that is, quite frankly, a job, right? Like, that is a J-O-B.
Yeah.
Like,
this
isn't something you get to show up every 2 weeks and do a thumbs up or thumbs down gladiator style and make these sort of decisions on public policy. He's out there every day managing billions of taxpayers' dollars.
Yeah.
Gladiator Emperor, he got hit by a bike and had to retire early. Now, anyway, he was on his bike, got hit by a car, and then retired.
The Caligula of Pima County, I believe.
Hold on. That gets a... Thank you. How many ballot propositions, because as a small business owner such as yourself, you have been on the front lines on this wage... minimum wage stuff.
So there are 13 total ballot propositions right now, one of which still may not end up being legal. Right. It's on the ballot right now, Proposition 140, but there's still some questions about whether
that's the open primary one?
Correct. There's some questions about whether that one will actually be legal, like even if it ends up on the ballot voted on, but they've already had to start printing these ballots because, as you know, it's election month, not election day anymore. And as such, you know, there's just a time limit for these to go out. So at the moment, Proposition 140 is there. They're calling it the Make Elections Fair initiative, and we're going to see whether that one will actually count or not. We don't have that information today, Chris.
Gotcha. How many props that have to do with your battle on the the minimum wage stuff? Is it two or one?
Just one now. There was two proposed ballot initiatives on there. One citizen launch initiative and one legislative referral. The citizen launch initiative ended up failing, falling short of the requisite number of signatures. They needed to submit 255,000 signatures. They submitted about supposedly 350,000, which if you do the math at home, that's about 40% over the legal minimum. But there was a challenge by the Arizona Restaurant Association. They began to look into those signatures. And as we've seen in...
They go into the magic Wonka machine?
Exactly. And we've seen this now in a number of races, right? We saw this sort of thing happen in the mayoral race a couple of years ago with Zach Gentzer being taken off the ballot. In the constable race, Anton Chisholm was recently taken off the ballot. Yeah. And in LD 17, Priya went out and challenged the Democrat challenger to herself and had him kicked off the ballot as well too for not having enough signatures. So this is sort of a time-honored practice of looking into particularly initiatives, right? Yeah. Where you've got to have the people have to be registered voters in either, in this case, the state, but also the signature collectors themselves need to be registered voters. And this Raise the Wage AZ Act that was looking to raise Arizona's minimum wage to $18 an hour and completely eliminate the server tip credit. So it would have taken server wages from $11.35 an hour to $18 an hour as well, too. This initiative had about 100,000 more signatures than they needed. But when we got a peek under the hood and started looking at those signatures, suddenly there was a little bit of questionableness. There were forms that weren't filled out all the way, signature collectors that weren't registered to vote. This group was out there just getting anybody and everybody to sign with paid signature collectors this last month. And things got sloppy. And so once we got a peek under that hood, they actually voluntarily pulled themselves off of the ballot after a legal challenge because they recognized that they were going to be staring down the barrel of a number of legal fees for the falsified signatures that they had presented.
So one question, because you and I have had many discussions about the Wonka machine. How much does the whole setup cost for a Wonka machine?
So the Wonka machine costs the Wonka machine, I believe, is a program called Signified, and this charges per signature to do these sort of checks.
What if I want to buy the software? What do you think?
You know, I've been trying to figure that one out myself. I feel like this would be probably more useful to own rather than lease in this particular case. And many things in life I prefer, you know, owning and as opposed to leasing. And in this case, like, I think this is one of them. But it's about $1.25 a signature to go out and challenge these guys.
I'm thinking we go in a little side business together and do signature verifications, the three of us. That's all we do.
Right. Obviously, there are a couple of specialized law firms that handle this sort of work, like Corey Langhofer.
Oh,
is a well-noted attorney.
Law firms.
You know, Ariano's firm as well, too, up in Phoenix, does that sort of work. So there's a couple that do this sort of work.
But let's go back to a healthy Republican Party. If you'll recall, we did the signature verification. Do you remember that? Two years ago?
Yep.
The Pima County Republican Party. We brought in volunteers. We did the signature verification. We did a statistically valid random sample that we designed, and we came within, I think, 1.something% of the Wonka machine.
Without a doubt.
At no cost.
Yep. There's no question that a well-organized party could save, you know, these PACs or private entities or donors or whatever it might be, an awful lot of money, tens of thousands, or in some cases, like this Raise the Wage AZ, millions of dollars you could spend on signature verification when you get into hundreds and hundreds of thousands of signatures.
I think where I'm going here is this would be something if you're a Republican who says you want election integrity and better elections and straight ahead, is the state of Arizona should buy the program. The state of Arizona should make it part of their business that if you run any of these things, you can, as part of being the state of Arizona, you can verify everything instead of having someone pay for it. It's just part of elections in Arizona.
So like the Secretary of State would manage it?
Yes.
Or perhaps even county elections, because not everyone is obviously a state-run election. Some of the cases we were talking about were city or county referrals or initiatives as well, too. It's obviously an interesting way to get something on the ballot, right? Of the 13 that are most likely going to be on our ballot over here, 11 are legislatively referred, so our Republican-controlled House and Senate pushed these ones on the voters as a way to bypass a potential veto from Governor Hobbs.
Yeah.
And two of them are citizen-created initiatives that got the requisite number of signatures. You can change one of two forms as well, too, because you can either change Arizona revised statutes or you can change the Constitution. And there's a big difference in the number of signatures you need between those two as well.
I just like the fact that if people knew it was out there and your opponents or the public can generally, you know, it's there. It's just that deterrent for you to do a sloppy job in the first place.
Right.
Right. That's what I like about it. So let's go to break. Shelley, Chris, Grant Krueger. And I want to talk about the actual ballot proposition when we come back. And then Grant's got food for thought. And then he's got Rich Feiler.
Rich Pfeiffer.
Pfeiffer, sorry, Pfeiffer.
Gentle Benz,
Baccio, and Agave House.
Yes, sir. Coming up.
You're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 of the Voice. It's Sting versus Phil Collins today. All right. Sting versus Phil Collins. I think it's been a fun playlist today. Little We'll Be Together. Actually, one of my favorite songs off of that album. Grant Krueger's here, Union Hospitality, the wonderful restaurants at St. Philip's Plaza, the Maverick, hosting the Gotaways Film Festival at the end of the month with the Tucson Crime Free Coalition.
September 28th.
And there'll be a roundtable moderated by an idiot with a 6 to 9 morning radio show, believe it or not.
Who could that idiot be?
I don't know. So the only one of the few local drive time talk show hosts in the entire city right there.
Amazing. I can't wait to find out who this surprise mystery guest here. The suspense is building.
Other people just beam their shows down from Phoenix. Anyway, Shelley Kais is here. And if we run out of time, Shelley, thank you for a good conversation and fun today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
We did politics and Membrillo.
Yeah, and we do want to put in a plug for the Tucson Republican Women before the day's over.
Well, give me real quick.
Tucson Republican Women are hosting their 40th anniversary gala September 21st. You can go to TucsonRW.org. Come to our gala. Dance, good food, fun, and celebrating women.
Love it. All right. Krueger, our good friend here, you have been on the front line of this wage thing.
So
you're the guy we want on that wall.
Well, in our sort of last segment over here, talking about these ballot initiatives, the one that we've all been fighting for in the restaurant business is Proposition 138, known as the Tipped Worker Protection Act. This one was also fought and challenged quite heavily. It was referred by the House and the Senate. It had some degree of bipartisan support. We did get 4 Democrat votes on this one to come over to the other side.
Well,
to put this one on the ballot, nice. Including local Democrat Alma Hernandez as well, too, voted for this one to help put this one in front of the voters. And what this would do is a change to Arizona's constitution. It would take the server wage, which is currently $3 less than whatever the full Monty minimum wage would be,
yep,
and it would change it to 25% less than whatever the full Monty minimum wage would be. And it would also guarantee an extra couple of dollars an hour for the servers should they not meet Arizona's minimum wage in tips. To give you an example, minimum wage is currently $14.35 an hour, and the server wage, $3 less, is $11.35 an hour. We're right now legally required to, of course, make up that tip difference should the servers not achieve that goal. It pretty much never happens. In my nearly 3 decades of doing payroll at this point, outside of the first week of training when they're not getting tips, we never, ever have to do that.
Yeah, if you can't make the $3 difference in tips, you'll be fired before it's over. There's something wrong.
The Tip Worker Protection Act would put an additional onus on the employer to make that, using today's numbers, $16.35 an hour, because the restaurant industry is so confident in what the server and bartender wages are, quite frankly, that we wouldn't even have to make that up, certainly on a regular or common basis. Now, this change comes about because when the server wage was created, Arizona's minimum wage was just a little over $5 an hour. So that $3 delta between $5 and, say, $2.13 was pretty substantial as an overall percentage.
Yeah.
But as things have gotten more expensive, prices have gone up, you know, the inflation that we all know that's happened over the last few years, that $3 becomes statistically less and less and less significant. $3 off of $14 is way different than $3 off of $5. And because Arizona's minimum wage is tied to inflation, it's going to go up every single year. We're going to get those numbers for your listeners on September 11th. The Never forget, the minimum wage calculation will be released by the state, but tied to CPI, and so we'll find out what Arizona's full Monty minimum wage is going to go up to. Approximately $15 an hour, plus or minus maybe 10 cents in either direction. I'm no wizard on what inflation was going to, you know, has been, but it's certainly been high over these last few years, and so it's safe to say that under the current system, our minimum wage is going to tick up yet again. And our big beef in the restaurant business has always been that as a percentage, the highest raise we have to give every year to minimum wage is to our highest compensated employees. And right. That's just nuts. Like, if you're going to be, no matter where you stand on a minimum wage, if you're going to have one, let's compensate the people that are making the least, as opposed to people that are making the most. Quite simple. And so this one's going to come to ballot November 5th. It's Proposition 138, the Tipped Worker Protection Act. We would ask for your votes for this one. You're going to see pretty much every server and bartender and restaurant in town starting to advocate for this one, because it would make a very substantial difference in the creep, this uptick of server wages, a category in the restaurant that doesn't need the help nearly as much as, say, the back of house.
So what's the, so for the average, just so if you're talking to a server right now, why do you tell them to advocate for this? Just give me real simple.
So the tipped model currently right now averages about $41 an hour in compensation for our servers. So something along the lines of an $18 an hour set minimum wage would represent a substantial pay cut. Any major disruption raising the server wage up to 50%, like what was proposed by this Raise the Wage Act, may quite frankly eliminate the tip system as we know it or reduce it. A system that's already under a lot of fire right now. There's a lot of tip fatigue out there in the world. There's so many places asking you for a tip on an iPad right now that it really starting to tick off the average consumer. But quite frankly, I think most consumers are very willing to tip in a full service restaurant environment. I want that level of service when I go out. I hope you do too. And I'm hoping that we can continue to not only have that level of service, but have that level of compensation.
Weren't there some New York restaurants that attempted to do the no tipped? We're just going to pay our people $20 an hour or something.
Very much so. Danny Meyer, Union Square Hospitality Group, the guys that brought
the
11
Madison.
The other
Union Hospitality guy.
Yes, Union Square. Oh, slightly bigger name over there. But they tried it too for a couple of years, and it was a colossal failure. The servers hated it and quit in droves, and they lost lots of their career servers that went to the more traditional tipped model. Yeah. And the customers hated it too, Chris. They wanted that power to be able to sit back at the end of their meal and be that judge, jury, and executioner and decide whether this was worth 15, 18, or 20%. And when you take away that power from the guest, it's also disenfranchising. So hopefully your listeners will go out there and go down ballot, not just vote for those Republican candidates, but also fill out those initiatives and vote yes for the Tip Worker Protection Act, Proposition 138.
So the other one we wanted to possibly mention was 312, is that what you said?
312, yes. That's a property tax rebate for non-enforcement of municipal nuisance laws. This one.
What does that mean?
This basically means that business owners that have to spend outside of pocket on, let's call it, the Josh Jacobson crime tax, as he's noted there, that if you've got to pay for fencing and cameras because you had to protect yourself from homeless encampments or you know, street side panhandling and other things that the city should be enforcing right now, they don't. You can have a process where you could actually apply for a rebate for some of those expenditures. The goal of Proposition 312 would be to incentivize the municipalities to enforce the laws that are already on the books.
So let's say, now, when you think about a rebate of your taxes, is that only property taxes?
Correct, Chris. That's okay. Annualized property taxes capped at whatever your property taxes would be for that calendar year. So, you know, when you're thinking of a commercial, say, restaurant location, something in my wheelhouse, you might have a, you know, $15,000 or $20,000 total property tax bill for something like the Maverick. We're not talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars here.
But that's let's say it's the city of Tucson's problem. It's a much smaller property tax, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, yes. So that, but it's the idea that you could get a rebate on that. What's the process so for something like that?
Yeah, that's how do we manage this?
And we got 2 minutes. Just let everyone
sounds
know.
Like a new form of government forming.
So ultimately, the citizen would be able to apply to the municipality, saying these were the expenses that I incurred, and here's my application process. The city has 30 days to respond affirmatively to accept that and offer the rebate, or to deny it. If they deny it, and I imagine there would be an awful lot of these denials, there would be a sort of appeal process through the superior court system, and hopefully we would see some sort of truncated processes to go through this process and deem what were legitimate, say, security expenses and which ones weren't, because it certainly could be open to abuse if you're not careful as well.
I can see the city of Tucson gets pre-printed ones that already have no on it.
Well, and of course there's the concern of who's gonna oversee it.
Yes.
And that's a big issue.
Well, this one was brought forth by our legislator. It's Proposition 312, and that is again a tax rebate for non-enforcement of municipal nuisance laws. One to keep a lookout on that ballot as well too.
All right, what's coming up on The Jump In with Grant Kruger?
So we got Rich Pfeiffer coming up, a great restaurateur operating down on University. He's got Gentle Ben's. He's got Basio Italian. They just opened up Agave House last year. He's kind of a lot like me to a certain degree, right? He's got a pub, a new American pub concept, an Italian concept, a Mexican concept, all located in the city of Tucson. And we're going to talk about that fun coming up on Jump In Tucson.
And how about what's happening during Food for Thought? What my favorite segment of the week.
So we're going to talk a little bit about differential taxes between the city and the county. Some of those differences that happen in enforcement and taxes.
You're the man, Grant Kruger. Thanks for coming in early and talking about all this.
Thanks for having us on Wake Up Tucson.
Have an amazing show on Jump In Tucson. Shelley, thank you for a nice time.
It was my pleasure. Thank you. Good to see you, Grant.
Always a pleasure.
We'll do it again soon. Tomorrow, Congressman Schweikert and the Ad Fed Hall of Achievement interviews. Wake up.